So good morning, my name is Jeff Shorgen. Today's presentation will be looking at a 2,4-D resistant population of buckthorn plantain. Introduction, 2,4-D is one of our oldest selective herbicides, discovered in the early 1940s, a selective herbicide. We may see some expanded use of this with the introduction of 2,4-D resistant soybeans. So looking into kind of our resistance theme here, we'll be looking at group 4, our synthetic auxins. Of the different sites of action, we see that it does have lower levels. This graph was taken from Dr. Ian Heap at weedsciences.org. On our y-axis, we see a number of species, and then at our x-axis, we see our year. Our synthetic auxins are seeing a slower trend of resistance. With right now, we have around 32 confirmed populations of resistant species. So to break that down a little bit further, synthetic auxins have four primary families. To break those down to the 32 total, phenoxies, 19 weed species have confirmed resistance to phenoxies, while only 6 are confirmed resistant to the pyridines. Benzoic acids also have 6 resistant confirmed species, and then our quinolones have 5. Our numerators here don't add up to 32 because we do have some overlap as far as some weeds that are resistant to one or more families. So looking at within our phenoxy group, again, those 19 species of the 32 confirmed, we do see that turf weeds that are prevalent include annuals such as spreading dayflower, prickly lettuce, and annual sow thistle. Perennials such as Canadian thistle, as if it wasn't hard enough to control without 2,4-D resistance, and then musk thistle and wild carrot as our biennials. So a case came to us from Greenwood, Indiana, that's just south of Indianapolis. A call was given, we were contacted, and after 2 applications of a 3-way herbicide, there was little to no control of a weed species population. They were applying a 3-way herbicide, 2,4-D and MCPP being in the phenoxy family, and then dicamba as well, which is a benzoic acid. After screening and asking the questions about fertilization, irrigation, and mowing practices, we determined that, okay, this could be an instance of resistance. So after a site visit from my supervisor, we brought some plants into the greenhouse, did some screenings, and there was signs that resistance could be possible in this population. So here's our site, the cemetery at Greenwood, Indiana. It was managed by the same lawn care company for 30 years. There was no diversity in the herbicide application, and as we see on the upper left-hand corner, buckhorn plantain, we see its seed head here, and if you look in this bottom right-hand corner, we see this picture was taken in the summer, and our turf is declining and going dormant while our drought-tolerant buckhorns are still prevalent. So most of this green in the background is in fact buckhorn plantain, so very, very good coverage of this weed, and again, very prolific seed heads as well. So a little more background on the buckhorn plantain. It is a perennial with rosette growth habit, and again, that prominent seed head, which is a good indicator of what type of weed it is. And then we also have the thick waxy leaves that help it to be drought tolerant. Again, if we looked at that picture, the grass was going dormant, but that green color was coming from those drought resistant plants. Typically found in undisturbed soils, undisturbed being not tilled, and perennial no-till systems, we see perennials such as buckhorn plantain. Cultural practices in turf, our fertilization, irrigation, things that help our turf become more competitive are best used for this control, but when that is not feasible, we do have selective herbicides to use in perennial grass systems. So looking at our objectives today, there were 2 main objectives, our first one being a greenhouse study. This was to specifically look at how resistant this weed was to 2,4-D. Again, this was in the greenhouse. And then our second objective was, being an extension issue, we wanted to be able to look at different chemistries to find out if there's anything that we could use other than 2,4-D that would be able to control this population. And that was in the field. So moving into our methods for the greenhouse, we collected samples from both West Lafayette, that was our susceptible population, and then we collected samples from the Greenwood population, and that was they were transplanted in the greenhouse, and with that able to grow out, and then we did apply a broad range of herbicide rates. Our 1x rate of 2,4-D being 1.68 kilograms acid equivalents per hectare, And then we ranged as high as 64 X-rate all the way down to 0.01 with a controlled check. And then another herbicide that we were looking at in a different family, again, our 2,4-D is part of the phenoxy group. We wanted to look at triclopyrazopyridine to find out if it was also resistant. We didn't have any information about that, but we wanted to see that if this chemistry would still work. So our range wasn't quite as high. We only went to 32 X-rate. And then our one X-rate being 1.1 kilograms acid equivalent of the label rate. So within the greenhouse, we evaluated control visually on a weekly basis. We did end up harvesting our fresh weights of the shoot, and then we put them back in the greenhouse to observe regrowth. So with our results that I'll be presenting in a while, we'll be looking at fresh weight and regrowth data. We did conduct this experiment twice, each with 5 blocks per experiment, and then a log logistics analysis with nonlinear regression. So what we ended up seeing was that the greenhouse did indicate that there were significant levels of resistance of this buckhorn plantain. And then also we saw that with the application of triclopyr in the greenhouse, that both the resistant and the susceptible populations reacted very similarly. So if we look at our, here we have our one rep of the 2,4-D rates. On the top, we see our susceptible plants. On the bottom, our resistant, each with their respective rates. If we look at our 1X rate, we see that our susceptible plants do have some epinasty and curling occurring, where there is none of the sort of control in our resistant population. If we were to compare the two species, we would need to look at we begin to see curling at the half rate of our susceptible, but we don't see the same symptomology until we look at the 16X rate for the resistance. So definitely a large margin of resistance there. So here with this graph, we have our fresh weight on the y-axis and our dose response on the x, log base there. We did find that there was an interaction between our dose and our biotypes being resistant and susceptible populations. When we looked at our I-50, or the rate that is needed to control the fresh weight 50%, we see that our resistance is 31.3 kilograms per hectare, where that number is 4.6 kilograms per hectare for our susceptible rate. And what that means is our RS factor has a value of 6.8, so 6.8 times more herbicide is needed to get the same control with our resistant population as our susceptible population. And that data was collected 4 weeks after application. Same with our regrowth dry weight. As we see on our y-axis, just a quick review, our symbols here, resistant populations are these black squares, our susceptible are these hollow circles. We do see a difference here with our ANOVA table, definitely a significant response with the interaction of dose and biotype. And then once we look at our I-50s here for the regrowth dry weight, we see a RS factor of 30.1. So again, 30.1 times more herbicide is needed to get the same control with our resistant population when compared to our susceptible. Now looking at triclopyr, if we look at this picture in general, our 1X rate, we do see epinasty both in the resistant and the susceptible. These responses were much similar and not as big a gap between symptomologies here as far as dosage. Here we had 1.2 kilograms acid equivalents per hectare. And these photos were taken a little over 3 weeks. Same with the 2,4-D application. We took these pictures 3 weeks after application. So here we see with our fresh weight again on the y-axis and dose on the x, we see that there's much more, the lines are much similar, our responses are much similar, which we saw that visually with the past graph. We see that our biotypes, that was not significant, nor was our interaction. Again, with the graph, we see that they're much similar. And then our RS factor is only 1.6, so very, very low to no resistance differences within these populations when looking at triclopyr in the greenhouse. And then here we have regrowth dry weight. We do see a significant interaction between dose and biotype, but our biotype was not significant. If we look at our resistant I-50s and then our susceptible I-50s, we do get an RS factor of 3.1, and it really comes to interpretation of where do you draw the line of low resistance versus no resistance versus high resistance. With some measurements, low resistance is anywhere from 1 to 3, we see low resistance from 3 up to about 30 X-ray, and then those high-resistant cases, those are the ones that you hear where a plant can dump the jug on it and it won't cause an effect. So we're looking at definitely significant levels of resistance, but a little bit lower levels here. So to wrap that up, our susceptible fresh weight, we do see that 6.8 and 30.1, much higher rates of resistance with 2,4-D as opposed to our triclopyr. So our greenwood buckhorn population was not resistant to triclopyr. We did get good control with that. And then we determined that, yes, our greenwood buckhorn population was 6.8 to 30.1 times more resistant to the 2,4-D. So now that we figured out that these plants were resistant, we needed to go back to our site or at the cemetery and figure out, all right, how can we control these? Again, it's a cemetery, so a lot of emotional and personal value to the people there. They want it to look nice. So we set up our study, and we tested many modes of action, mechanisms of action. So here are different mechanisms of action along with treatments, and just kind of a breakdown here. We did continue to, we wanted to see also to reaffirm that 2,4-D was not working on these. So we added some phenoxycarboxylic acid applications, including our 2,4-D, 2,4-DP, MCPA, and MCPP. But then we also added synthetic auxins in the pyridine family. We did see good control of triclopyr in the greenhouse, so we're going to add some more treatments in that family, and with our benzoic acid also. And then we included two ALS inhibitor treatments, and then PPO as well, and then our HPPD inhibitors. Those were also on the treatment list. So looking at our data here, we applied herbicides in October and then came back in June to rate to see how our control was. When we look at our ALS inhibitors, metsulfuron and phenoxylam, we did have decent control with the metsulfuron. However, with the phenoxylam that's not labeled for buckhorn plantain, we did see not that good of a response. When we look at our PPO inhibitors, again, not a very good response in terms of control. We do, however, see an increase with our HPPD inhibitors, mesotrione and tapramazone. However, this came at a cost where we applied three times each at a two-week interval. So that was a large cost and still only around the 65% control. And then here we have our phenoxy group within the synthetic auxins, and we see very poor control. Again, this was the issue we had, and we were just reaffirming in the field that, no, these herbicides do not work very well. And then dicamba, we see that that also did not work well, our benzoic acid. And then moving on to our pyridines, surprisingly, our triclopyr didn't do as well, but within that family, our clopyrrolid did. So showing us that, you know, no, our phenoxies didn't work, but pyridines were definitely an option. We saw triclopyr in the greenhouse and clopyrrolid in the field. So our results with that clopyrrolid did provide the best control at 95%. The major thing to look at here is that pyridines are still a group 4 synthetic auxin herbicide, where as just the same as 2,4-D. So we see that the population is resistant to one family within the mechanism of action, but not another. So that was an interesting point to look at. And then we did have our class 27 HPPD inhibitors did show control as well. But again, not something that we would look for in the field with only 50%. So our conclusion, our buckhorn population was resistant to some of the class 4 herbicides. Typically though, once we see a herbicide resistant plant within a family, we see that that is blanketed over all the families. However, again, it's selective for just one. So why that is, we need to kind of look into and understand why. Additional reports, we have seen some populations, another population in Indiana, in Muncie, Indiana, where the buckhorn plantain is resistant to 2,4-D. And then, interestingly enough, this a population that is resistant to 2,4-D and triclopyr, so both the pyridines and the phenoxies, which again, that's a little more traditional type of resistance. So I want to thank all the folks at the cemetery who helped us out with our experiments and got us through. And then with that, I will take any questions. Yes?
Do you have any idea how
The question was, how many applications were made of 2-4-D over the 30 years? At least one application per year, but I'm not specifically sure, but I can get that information to you after the presentation.
Got time for one more.
Yes.
What kind of effect, if you were applying those same products in the fall, say September or October, what kind of effect did you expect?
We did apply for our treatments in our field study. We did apply those in October. And so as you saw, again, the 2,4-D didn't do as well, even with the fall application, but our Clopyrrolid did do well.